It was several years ago, quite a few years ago, where a family moved to the town that we were living in, and they needed some help. They requested some help. Our deacon ministry stepped in through the church we were a part of. Me and Beverly invested much time and resources in assisting this family. But it was a family that, you know, and with our deacon ministry as well, we wanted to be very generous on the front end, helping people. But there's also some accountability that's built in, right? We don't just become a check-writing service for people and in effect become enablers of unhealthy behavior. They become some accountability, and we wanted to grow and learn together. But it became very clear that this family didn't want to grow and change and move in a healthy and more whole direction. They just wanted to make life work and access the system, and they were doing that with all the local churches, ours included. And we'd invested a lot. We loved on their kids. We had them over to our place lots. And then we hear quite a few comments that are not complimentary. In fact, they're very, it goes beyond gossip. We were, stories they were sharing about us were absolutely untrue, and they were very, very negative. And it hurt, and I wasn't even sure how to respond to the intensity of it, of, you know, as we would hear from different people who knew us, and they knew obviously it wasn't true, but, you know, you wonder what the rest of the whole community will, what will the response be? And I remember mentioning it to someone in our church, and they said, because it was, you know, how do you even respond to that? And their comment was, why do you need to respond? Just let your character speak for itself. The truth will come out at some point. And so we did. We just went on living and loving. And, you know, in essence, that family, unfortunately, used up everybody that was willing to assist them in that community and moved on to another community. And they continued the unhealthy behavior and dynamic, and their children ended up being taken away by Child and Family Services. There's just no ability, willingness, or ability to move in a healthy direction. And a lot of things will go on in our world, even when we're trying to help people. Our motives will be questioned, or our character will be assassinated. Love people anyway. Keep doing what is right anyways. And this morning's message, Mark 23-65, I've titled this morning, Treachery and Trial. That Jesus goes through, this is getting closer to where he pays the ultimate price. Didn't deserve it, does it willingly though. And this starts out with the treachery part. Someone betraying him in a very powerful way. So the treachery part's kind of from 43-52, and then a trial, can even call it a mock trial, 53-65. When we think about treachery, I found this quote, tricks and treachery are the practice of fools that don't have brains enough to be honest. Try and trick and manipulate their way through life. Now, it's not really about brains, I don't like that word in there, because they're incredibly smart people, but they're trying to sneak it through in a way that doesn't actually help them grow in a positive way. They're just trying to get through it, right? Put one face on for this person, another one on. A very stressful way to live, I understand. Trying to trick and treachery, bring treachery and harm to other people. To some degree, we can all slip into it, right? It's easy to put someone else down so we feel better about ourselves for a moment. And our society can even promote it. In fact, some of our movies, almost the theme of that movie has been this next quote, treachery is noble when aimed at tyranny. We can hold it up. Wow, this person was offended in a wrong, a totally unjust way. And so they should be able to get back at this other group of people or whatever else. And we promote it. We go, yeah, get them back because they're getting what they deserve. That's not the way Christ lived, and that's not what he calls us as disciples, how he calls us to live. Found another quote when it comes to treachery. I hate a cramp, he thought. It is a treachery of one's own body. This one stuck out to me because my brother has a weird sense of humor, and you know, he'd done tile work around their tub, and so he stood on the edge of their tub, right? And how often do you use just those muscles holding you up? And he had a cramp later that night in his calf muscles. But he's the one that's always trying to convince people when they feel a cramp coming on, quick, point your toes. I don't know if you know that, but that makes it 100 times worse. The best thing you should do is stand flat, and if anything, stretch it out a little bit. But if you can convince somebody to point your toes and you got my brother's sense of humor, then that's, haha, that's funny. But treachery, when it hits us personally, how do we respond to that? When somebody is treacherous, malicious, mean to us, well, here's how Jesus did it, reading in verse 43. Carrying on from last week, and immediately, while he was still speaking, Judas came. Here's the treachery part. One of the 12, that's key. And with him a crowd with swords and clubs, and the chief priests and the scribes and the elders. This is no small group here. Now the betrayer, that's referring back to Judas, had given them a sign saying, the one I will kiss is the man. Seize him and lead him away under guard. And when he came, he went up to him, they went up to Jesus, and said, Rabbi, calling him teacher, and kissed him, and they laid hands on him and seized him. Just stopping there for a moment. Again, Mark is pointing out the sheer treachery of Judas here. One of the 12. Been traveling, been taught. He's watched Jesus do incredible miracles. Love people, love them. Take them aside to teach them. Here's what the parable meant. Give them insights. 3 years of investing in his life. That's no small matter. That's incredible treachery. And he comes and betrays him for a few pieces of silver, and he's arranged it ahead of time. A kiss would have been just kind of a greeting at the time. It's not a kiss like we do in North America, but it's a greeting, and it gives them a term of respect. Rabbi greets him, but the one that I greet, he is the one. Take him. Mark understood the betrayal to consist of indicating the time and the place where Jesus could be found, right? We see that on some police shows. When's the best time to take down this known criminal so he doesn't have time to react, respond, get his ammunition all together? What's the best time to take him out? And it's kind of planned like that, against Jesus. Against Jesus. It's a high-risk takedown kind of thing. But is it really necessary? And it mentions the crowd. Here, the word here really is more accurately translated a mob or rabble. They've just gathered a bunch of people off the street, paid some of them to give false testimony, but there's also official people. There's temple guards. They're paid. There's lots of different groups. There's the religious leaders. This is quite a crowd, and it's key to note that before this, every time that Mark has mentioned one of any of the words that can be translated crowd, it's always been positive. They're favorable towards Jesus. They come out to listen, and they're interested. From this point on, from this very verse, 14:43 on, every time that word, a word that could be translated as crowd, it's always hostile towards Jesus. It shifts right now. So continuing to read, verse 47. But one of those who stood by drew his sword. We can look at the other Gospels and see that that was Peter, and struck the servant of the high priest and cut off his ear. And also in the other accounts of the gospel, Jesus heals it. And Jesus said to them, "Have you come out against a robber with swords and clubs to capture me? Day after day I was with you in the temple teaching, and you did not seize me." But this is a key but here. I won't say a big but it is key. He says, "I've been living a public life. Everything I've done is known. You know my character. I haven't retaliated. You take me down like a high-risk criminal." Really? How appropriate is that? But then, but let the scriptures be fulfilled. Even when he's facing this horrible treachery, this betrayal by one of his own disciples, he goes, "God is bigger. Let the scriptures be fulfilled." God is doing something way bigger than the impact it's having on me and my life. Boy, that's hard to keep in mind, isn't it? When we're experiencing treachery up close and personal. But let the scriptures be fulfilled. And who stands by Jesus in that? Like we said last week, but they all left him and fled. That is, all his followers. They left him and fled. Wow. So in his moment, when he's gone, "I'll have a greater faith in God than what is actually happening to me or in the people around me." Boy, they demonstrated that. They're all out of there. In fact, they leave with such passion. Look at the next verses. Just a real illustration of the chaos and the fear going on. "And a young man followed him with nothing but a linen cloth about his body. And they seized him, but he left the linen cloth and ran away." Sometimes I like having a picture on the screen that gives us a picture of what's going on in this verses. I wasn't sure what picture to use for these verses. But it's a clear illustration. I mean, the fear. He runs away naked. The fear that's going on. It's a chaotic event going here as this treachery is acted out by Judas. And in the middle of it, Jesus doesn't abandon faith or turn cheek. But everybody following him leaves him all alone to face this. And then it gets into a trial of sorts in verses 53 and following. "And they led Jesus to the high priest, and all the chief priests and the elders and scribes came together, and Peter followed him at a distance, right into the courtyard of the high priest, and he was sitting with the guards and warming himself at the fire. Now the chief priests and the whole council were seeking testimony against Jesus to put him to death, but they found none." They're trying to find some evidence, some reason to put him to death, but they find none. Scripture's so honest. "For many bore false witness against him, but their testimony did not agree." So it becomes clear in the whole room, everybody gathered, yeah, this guy's saying that about him, and this guy's saying that about him, and they both can't be true. There's conflict, there's disagreement right in that room. In fact, if you back this up, even them taking him at this time, all sorts of things don't add up. It just amounts to an illegal trial in many ways. One commentator writes this: "The historical problems connected with the trial are notorious. At various points, Mark's account is in violation of the provisions of the Mishnah Tractate of the Sanhedrin." So here's the way we're going to carry out trials so everybody gets a fair trial. You know, it'd be like violating the Canadian laws. Here's the way, right? We're going to have a judge, we're going to have this, we're going to have that. And then someone going, but actually in this case, here's what's going to happen. So first, here's how it violated. No trial was to be held at night. They arrested him at night in the garden. Second, the verdict in a capital case, where it could be death, could not be reached until the second day. Take some time to process this. And therefore, trials could not be held on the eve of a Sabbath or a feast day. It was. Third, witnesses had to be warned to relate only true, certainly not paid, and encouraged to give false testimony, but were warned to relate only true first-hand testimony. Fourth, those accused of blasphemy could be convicted only if they reviled the divine name. So now they're trying to expand the definition of blasphemy. Fifth, trials could not be held in the palace of the high priest. And it was. Sixth, the Old Testament does not specify crucifixion as a punishment, but that's what they demanded. They violate their own laws for a specific case because they hated him so much. And they break their own laws. And the irony of one of them is that it's a judge, the judge, the one who will judge everyone in the end, is the one on trial here. Ever thought about that? It's the judge of the universe. God the Father has given that to the Son. It's the judge on trial. Read a couple next verses here. Starting at verse 57. And some stood up and bore false witness against him, saying, "We heard him say, I will destroy this temple that it is made with hands, and in 3 days I will build another, not made with hands." Yet even about this, their testimony did not agree. So even what they're saying now doesn't all add up, doesn't agree with each other. And the high priest stood up in the midst, and Jesus asked, "Have you no answer to make? What is it that these men testify against you?" And here's Jesus' response. But he remained silent and made no answer. What a powerful character. Remain silent. Not, yeah, but, you know, this is wrong, this is whatever. Because it's speaking to deaf ears. I remember being a youth pastor. I don't know if I've shared this story here or not. In Southern Ontario, had someone just driving through town come into the church and say, "Hey, I need $20 worth of fuel just to get me to the next city, just to do this. I've got things waiting. I just need this, need that." And I said, "Excellent. Let's hike right over to the garage and I'll get you the fuel." And he goes, no, I don't want to bother you. Just give me $20. And I'll grab my jerry can. We'll go right over to the garage. No, just give me the money. Anyways, it goes back and forth. He gets increasingly abrasive and abusive to the point of, "You can't even be a Christian if you won't give me $20. Why even argue with it? Just leave it. It's there's no way we're going to win that argument." And he came in asking for fuel. I was absolutely willing to give him some fuel. But it changed, right? And he's remained silent. He doesn't, why? Why? Let the scriptures be fulfilled. Let this play out. You're already convinced of my guilt and the punishment. But he remained silent and made no answer. Again, the high priest asked him, "Are you the Christ, the Son of the Blessed?" And Jesus said, "I am." And he does share some truth. "And you will see the Son of Man seated at the right hand of power, coming on the clouds of heaven." And the high priest tore his garments and said, "What further witnesses do we need? Even though we're breaking a whole bunch of laws running this trial, let's bring conviction right now. You have heard his blasphemy. What is your decision?" And they all condemned him as deserving death. And some began to spit on him and cover his face and strike him, saying to him, "Prophesy!" And the guards received him with blows, or they took him into their hands, took him into captivity, beating on him. And they treat Jesus like a traitor. And many other things. And it's a false trial. It's a mock trial. It's a mockery of justice. There is no justice. It's completely unjust. Just driving home the point, it's unjust. The perfectly sinless dying for the completely sinful and fallen. It's unjust, absolutely. And even the process of arriving there is unjust. This whole trial is broken. Jesus' response to treachery, being betrayed by someone he's invested in for 3 years, and a mistrial, a complete mockery of trial, is one of faith. Let the scriptures be played out. And one of truth. He'll still speak truth so that when he's resurrected, people will go, oh, yeah, he said this. He is the one. But he's also a picture of how we need to respond as his followers. Not as the world would say, hey, when somebody does something treacherous against you, you have every right, get them back. In fact, we'll cheer you on. This is great. But that's not the way of Jesus, and that's not the way of his disciples. There's stuff going on all over the world that are absolutely unjust. Christians being persecuted and trials, facing treachery, people betraying them. And the result of those trials is they face horrible consequences. I mean, look at the news in the Philippines, Indonesia, countries in North Africa, Middle East. And yes, increasingly U.S. and Canada. It's people losing their jobs for being a follower of Jesus and falsely accused. But it's proven in one way or another that they're guilty of something. And it's expanding a definition. It's doing something else. It's breaking our own laws as a nation. But it's getting what somebody wants. And there's treachery and mistrial and all sorts of stuff going on. That's one of the reasons why we as a church, those going to Bible college, Bailey, should apply for the bursary. Because we support people every semester that they spend at Bible college. Because it's no easy matter to think Christianly and to act Christianly, act like Jesus does. That's a process and growth. That takes time. That's learning for life. And Jesus calls us to it as disciples. Yes, we learn some of that in Sunday school and clubs, and thank you for all who teach. This is the way of Jesus. And it's radically different. It's not just a little tweak different than culture. It's radically different than culture. And even when we're facing treachery and trial, we can too say, in our words and actions, but God is bigger. And we can still act like Jesus does with a life of faith and speak truth in love in the midst of it. But we don't need to defend ourselves. We don't need to do all sorts of other acrobatics with our words or lives to prove anything. This isn't it. There's so much more, and God is up to something way bigger. So even when we face this, we can walk the path of Jesus as true disciples, not betraying, and yes, sometimes even facing false trial. Would you join me in prayer? God, we can understand this story. We can see how you responded, Jesus. But it's dramatically different for us to live this out when it's up close and personal. When it is a friend of ours betraying us. When we are at the center of real treachery, gossip and slander, and even false trials, even falsely accused. We don't need to be filled with bitterness and revenge and rage and all sorts of other things. We don't need to be. Naturally we are. And we react. But Jesus, would you continue your transforming work that we would truly be followers of Jesus, seeking to glorify God, as our mission statement says. And in everything, we would be concerned about your glory, not our little reputations, but your glory. And we would live increasingly consistent with that, even when facing treachery and trials, God. We cannot do this apart from you, Jesus. Of our own, we will react. by the power of your Spirit, we can respond like you, Jesus. Would you equip us, enable us, train us, teach us, prepare us for living a very hard life? You say we will face trials of many kinds. May we bring you honor and glory in every one of those. We pray in your name. Amen.